As the American-born daughter of immigrants, Dr. Sunita Puri knew from a young age that the gulf between her parents' experiences and her own was impossible to bridge, save for two elements, medicine and spirituality. And it was that tension that eventually drew Puri, a passionate but unsatisfied medical student, to palliative medicine, a new specialty attempting to translate the border between medical intervention and quality of life care. Puri's new book, That Good Night, is a meditation on impermanence and the role of medicine in helping us to live and die well. Sunita Puri is an assistant professor of clinical medicine at the University of Southern California and medical director of palliative medicine at the Keck Hospital and Norris Cancer Center. It is a great pleasure to welcome Sunita Puri to the roundtable this morning. Sunita, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
What brought you to want to look at this particular subject in this particular way?
I had always been a writer before I became a doctor. I had always loved words and stories, and I'd always, you know, kind of written and kept journals and written essays throughout my medical training. So I wanted to explore on the page why I was drawn to this particular branch of medicine, palliative medicine, which is an unusual choice for a doctor. And I also wanted to try to reconcile where I came from as the daughter of immigrant parents with very strong spiritual beliefs with where I ended up going, and that is into the practice of a field in medicine where we really focus on facing patients' mortality with them and naming and alleviating the suffering that they experience. So the book was my attempt to kind of find a home for all my different selves, my writer self, my doctor self, and the part of me that really believes that language and better conversations can save medicine and heal our patients who we may not be able to cure.
You described it briefly, but I'm hoping you can give us a full definition of palliative care, and then we'll talk about what ultimately drew you to it.
Sure. So palliative care is a subspecialty of medicine that focuses on seeing and alleviating the suffering that comes when a patient and family are facing a serious illness. And so we treat physical symptoms like pain that come with a disease like cancer. We treat symptoms like nausea that may come with the results of cancer treatment, for example. And we also treat the emotional and spiritual domains of suffering that come with facing a terminal illness. And it's distinct from hospice care. And I think the two terms are often interchanged. But hospice is a type of palliative care that we provide when we think patients have 6 months or less to live. And we provide palliative care using a team. So there's a doctor, a nurse, a social worker, and a chaplain or spiritual care provider, because it takes that sort of intense teamwork to care for patients and families who are facing something very difficult.
You mentioned in the beginning of our conversation about how the field is one that is somewhat unusual for a doctor to go into. What drew you to it? What was it about it that piqued your curiosity?
You know, I had gone into medicine in part to try to emulate my mother, who's an anesthesiologist and who practices very highly technical life-saving medicine. But when I tried to follow in her footsteps, I didn't feel like I was the sort of doctor that I was meant to be. I didn't feel as though I was really able to focus on and be with patients in their moments of vulnerability and suffering. And when I did an elective in palliative care during the very last stretch of medical school, that was when I learned that my place in medicine was really being with patients and families, talking them through the hardest moments that they face, and helping them to make decisions that are best for them. And to me, that because it's a very language-based specialty, I think that I was drawn to it because of my love of writing and love of storytelling and my love of medicine. And I think that, you know, we rely a lot on medications and on procedures, even in palliative care, but we use them to a different end. And that's kind of how I found my place.
After being in a residency where success is survival, right? Success equals survival. Then as you go into palliative care, you are now dealing with an intangible, mortality and suffering, the loss of mobility, disability. What was that like to make that switch and to be in some ways counterintuitive?
You know, I think at the very beginning of my palliative care training, it was a real shock to the system. I'd come into the field assuming that I knew a lot about it. But when you are actually in the role of needing to treat symptoms and to kind of unlearn all of the ways that you were taught to communicate with patients and families, it was really a steep learning curve. One of the chapters in the book, and actually the whole second section of the book, is called The Unlearning, because it was really a process of looking at how I was communicating with people, looking at how I was talking around rather than about the truth of their disease, and really learning to do it differently. So it was both a shock to the system, but it also, again, I really felt like I was learning to be the sort of doctor that I had imagined myself being.
You say that your specialty was not cures at this point. It was about questions. How so?
So, you know, when we are trained in medicine, we're really focused on extending survival, identifying a problem, and fixing it. That's really how the medical mind is primed when you're early in your education. And when I was with patients in my palliative care training, and when I'm with them every day now, it's less about cures and it's much more about trying to help them understand where they are with their disease process and to ask them questions like, if we cannot fix what's going on for you, what do you hope for? If a patient tells me I'm a fighter and I want everything done, I have to ask them, help me understand what you're fighting for. Help me understand what sort of fight is worth it to you. Help me understand when you say that you want everything done, what does everything look like for you? So it's getting very granular because I think in medicine we gloss over those terms and what they mean and we assume they mean a lot of different things when in fact someone may actually mean that they're only willing to do everything up to a certain point and if it compromises their independence and dignity, they wouldn't want the treatments that would venture into that realm. And so it is much less about saying, I know I can fix the problem, and it's much more about, if I cannot do for you what I might hope to be able to do, what should we do and work towards next?
It seems as though, in my reading of your book, that your patient, yes, is the patient, is the person who is dying, but it is also the loved ones, the family, the friends, those around who are by the bedside.
Certainly. So what I commonly will teach the medical students and the residents is that in palliative care, the patient is your patient, but the family is also your patient. And that kind of widens our lens when we walk into a room. So it's people experience serious illness in the context in which they have lived their lives. So understanding who's important to them, who helps them make decisions, what conflicts they may encounter when trying to voice their wishes, if there are family members that oppose or suppress their voice, I think those are all very important things that we have to be attentive to in our work. And they can be very challenging because families are complex, family dynamics are complex. And I write about in the book a number of situations where there was infighting between family members about what may be in the patient's best interest or what he or she would actually say for themselves if they could speak to me. So a part of the art of palliative medicine is navigating the complex social world in which a patient has created for themselves.
And there was great complexity to your family relationship as well of what brought you to this profession and trying to come to terms with what your parents did and what you did.
Mm-hmm. My parents are kind of the heartbeat of the book in a lot of ways. So as much as this is a book that really explores what it meant for me to venture into uncharted territory and to practice palliative medicine, it's equally about the forces that shaped and almost primed me for that path. As I mentioned, my mother's an anesthesiologist and my father's an engineer, but both, even though they are scientists, are deeply, deeply spiritual people. And I write about the place they came from, which was really childhoods of poverty in India. And what they will tell me saved them was their belief in the sacred, was their reverence for the divine. And I grew up immersed in that world. My father talked to me when I was very young about how everything in life is temporary, including our lives, but also our suffering. And I have to say, Joe, those lessons started to make the most sense to me when I became a doctor, because I was thrown into the suffering of other people without having a way to understand it. And it was drawing upon those lessons I'd heard for years when I was a child and adolescent. Those were the lessons that helped me to learn to practice medicine well. They were also the lessons that led me to palliative medicine. And for many people, that may seem counterintuitive, that science and spirituality could sit side by side and even shape each other. But that's exactly what happened in my life. And I wrote about it because as I was writing about my parents and about my medical training, it was in the writing of the book that I actually came to that realization of how I would not have gone into this field if it weren't for the very spiritual lessons that I had learned as a child and that I saw my parents really model for me.
It seems as though there could not be anything more spiritual than being present as life leaves a human body.
Certainly. I think even though death in medicine is very much thought of as a medical moment, we have a very precise set of ways that we perform a death exam. I think I have also come to think of death as a sacred moment. And I think it's the sacred and the spiritual aspects of death and dying that we have slowly lost over time. Many, many eons ago, there were books called The Ars Moriendi, of The Art of Dying Well, that people looked to in the Middle Ages to get guidance about how to live their last days with dignity and grace. And it was, you know, members of the clergy that tended to a deathbed. And I think that's in many civilizations, that was the case. But nowadays, it's very much about medicalizing death, so much so that we don't always know when a patient is even in the process of dying, because there's always something we think we can offer to postpone the inevitable. But when I'm attending to a patient who's in those final stages, or when I have been in the room when the soul leaves the body and the patient has died, it's profoundly sacred. It's profoundly sacred.
The name of the book is That Good Night, Life and Medicine in the 11th Hour. Sunita Puri, I thank you very much for spending time with us and wish you all the luck with the book and your continued work in palliative care. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is That Good Night. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.